This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Division of the Arts and Humanities at the University of Chicago, offering an interdisciplinary Master of Arts program in humanities that provides individualized attention in a supporting community. The flexible curriculum allows students to focus coursework within a single department or engage with multiple disciplines, creating a uniquely tailored graduate degree. Applications now open for the April 30th deadline at humanities.uchicago.edu.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube. But what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.
Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop.
And honored to stand before you tonight as your Democratic nominee.
Obviously, this is not the result we sought. But unlike Donald Trump, I'm not going to question the outcome.
I know I'm on the right side of the issues. When I first started running, I said I had to be able to look at myself in the mirror. I could still look at myself in the mirror.
We made them use their entire arsenal just to beat us.
My name is Daniel Biss. And I'm proud to be standing before you as the Democratic nominee for Congress.
I've leveled no attacks in this campaign against my opponents. Campaigns can and should be a civil debate about issues and ideas.
I have five pieces of legislation ready to go once I get to Congress. People want to hear about someone who can do things. And I represent the future.
We got a good one for you today. After months of campaigning, several hotly contested and crowded races for the U.S. Senate, governor, and the U.S. House came to a close in Illinois' primary election last night. And seats that had been held for decades, well, they're now a step closer to being filled. On this episode of the podcast, we'll talk with Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton, who came out on top and won the Democratic primary to replace Dick Durbin in the U.S. Senate. She's poised to become Illinois' second Black woman senator. And we're going to hear from a few more of last night's big winners. Don Tracy, who won the Republican nomination for Senate. Evanston Mayor Daniel Biss, who clinched a win in the fight for Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky's seat in the 9th District. And Darren Bailey, whose Republican win in the governor's primary race kicks off a repeat matchup between Bailey and J.B. Pritzker for the general election in the fall. We'll be breaking down everything you need to know with a panel of political experts. But first, let's tap into the WBEZ newsroom and check in with some of the journalists who covered the big day. At the table was Claire Lane, Morning Edition anchor, Mawa Iqbal, our Statehouse reporter, and Mariah Wolfel, our city government and politics reporter. Now, Mariah and Mawa were reporting from the field last night, following a couple of the big races very closely. Here's Mariah with how things looked from her lens.
I was at Illinois Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton's watch party last night.
And the energy there, I imagine, was pretty electric.
Just exuberant. I mean, they started screaming, supporters started screaming the second NBC National called the race, which was a little bit before, you know, we took our time to kind of call our race based on the Associated Press calls and other factors. NBC was the first to call the race, and supporters just started screaming, and then the drinks were flowing, they were dancing, and, you know, that went on for about an hour before they heard from Stratton herself.
Yeah. Mawa, how about you? Where were you?
So I was at the Crown Plaza Convention Center here in Springfield. It was also a very exuberant and joyful crowd, about maybe like 100, 200 people that came out for Darren Bailey. And sort of a similar thing, too, that what Mariah had experienced, where NBC National called the race a little bit before the Associated Press had called the race. And people were like holding up their phones, showing the NBC homepage that saying that Darren Bailey had won according to their projections. So everyone was screaming. Some people were crying. People were dancing.
Wow.
They played Cotton Eye Joe. So it was a kind of a
classic
nod
hit.
Right. A nod to Darren Bailey's sort of rural roots. But it was definitely the vibes are very, electric, say, as Mariah had said, too.
And I want to hear from all three of you on this, because we did see a lot of crowded races in this primary among both the Democrats and the Republicans. So give me your main takeaways from the results last night. Claire, why don't you go first?
I mean, I think the anti-Trump campaign is proving, and Mariah talked about this during Morning Edition, that that's what Illinois voters want. We want a really strong anti-Trump message, and that's what they're supporting.
Yeah. Mariah?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I also think affordability was a big buzzword of this campaign season, and candidates fell along, you know, the Democratic spectrum on how they want to achieve that affordability. We saw further progressive policies, more moderate policies on affordability. Stratton was certainly more of a progressive policy candidate on affordability, pushing for Medicare for All, the highest minimum wage raise in that race to $25 an hour. But I think on the House races, I kind of caution against like doing sweeping takeaways on the House races, because these districts are so unique, so different. There was a lot of outside spending skewing the results. Not skewing the results, I shouldn't say that, but, you know, influencing voters with TV commercials that really didn't have a lot to do with the interest groups themselves, what their interests were. And so it is kind of hard to say, because, you know, in one district, a U.S. former representative will get a second chance. In another, the popular U.S. former U.S. rep who represented the district before Jesse Jackson lost. And so you kind of have to like take a step back and look at the individual factors of each of these districts, because the results are kind of mixed in the House races.
Right. Yeah, excellent point. Mawa, what was the takeaway for you?
The takeaway for me, one of the other takeaways that Claire and Mariah hadn't mentioned too, was just the fact that Governor Pritzker had a really great night, I think. I think not only obviously did he win handily, right, his own primary. Of course, he ran unopposed. But he also proved that he could take someone like his lieutenant governor, his running mate for the past several years, Juliana Stratton, and elevate her to the position of U.S. Senator, beating out someone, you know, Raja Krishnamoorthy, who not only is a current sitting Congress member who's been there for a decade, but also had amassed this war chest of over $20 million. And, you know, Pritzker, he pumped his own fortune into Stratton's campaign through a super PAC. He also, like in the final days of the campaign, was going around the state with her. He was appearing in ads with her. But it really showed that he could take someone who wasn't really known, at least not as known as Krishnamoorthy, and maybe Robin Kelly, who also is a current sitting Congress member, are, but take her and elevate her to this pretty historic win. You know, of course, with this Senate seat, whoever wins in November, which now it seems likely that Stratton will win in November, given just the political dynamics of Illinois being a hard blue state, they will stay in this seat for decades to come.
We're going to spend this hour talking about the top races from last night, and we're going to hear from some of the winners. But Claire, are there any races that weren't put to bed?
Yes. So Illinois voters are still technically waiting for the results of the Democratic primary for state comptroller. So Rep. Margaret Croak and State Senator Karina Villa were separated by a pretty slim margin very late last night. Croak ended up giving a speech to her supporters saying that she was really confident that she will be the nominee in the Democratic Party, pretty much declaring victory. Mm-hmm. But with nearly 90% of the expected votes, Croak had a 2 percentage point lead. And this has not been called officially yet by the Associated Press.
Let's talk about the governor's race for a moment, Mawa. Was it expected that Darren Bailey would win the Republican primary, or was this a close race?
Yeah, I would say so. I would definitely say so. It's interesting because Bailey definitely was lagging behind in fundraising behind his three competitors, but he certainly has a name recognition, right? So not only was he a former state senator here in the legislature, but he also ran against Pritzker in 2022 and lost pretty badly, I would say. He lost by double-digit percentage points. But, you know, that has elevated his brand, his name, to a more statewide audience. And also, unfortunately, this past October, members of his family were killed in a helicopter crash. And that was that tragedy. I mean, it was such an immense loss, right? Yeah. And it was, there's also these questions of, you know, this is in October. Is he going to continue his run? And he chose to, right? He's a devout Christian, so he said that he felt like he had a higher calling and a purpose from God to continue and continue in his family member's honor.
Mm-hmm.
And that certainly loomed heavy over the watch party as well.
Yeah, well, Governor Pritzker went unopposed in the Democratic primary. And even though it's far out, I mean, do you think Bailey has a good shot against him this time?
I'm pretty skeptical. You know, like I mentioned earlier, too, that Illinois is a pretty deep blue state, and it only has become more so. You know, Bailey's issue last time around was that he just could not get any of the Cook County or Collier County voters. He had lost 700,000 voters in Cook County to J.B. Pritzker, and then also, like, was only able to clinch McHenry County, so one of the five Colliers. I guess the thing to note, you know, this time around is that Bailey is trying to brand himself as more of a moderate type of candidate, you know? Like, he's not the hardline conservative firebrand that he was 4 years ago, campaigning on these hardline social issues like anti-abortion access, pro-gun rights. Like, he definitely, like Mariah was talking about, also focused his campaign on affordability. And he said, you know, last night he was like, I'm going to spend the next 5 months campaigning in Chicago. Mm. So we'll see.
Interesting. And Mariah, Juliana Stratton was neck and neck at one point with Congressman Roger Krishnamoorthy. What do you think led her to pulling ahead last night?
Yeah, a couple factors, and you're right. Like, you know, up until maybe a week before the election, I think Raja Krishnamoorthy, a lot of people would have put their bets on him. And so it is a pretty stunning win that she won with roughly 40% of the vote.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Pritzker, as Mawa kind of detailed, Pritzker was out on the campaign trail with her. She had a lot of other progressive heavyweights out on the campaign trail in the last week. Pritzker threw $5 million to her campaign, or, you know, to a PAC helping her campaign in the final weeks as well. And I do think that the takeaway is that her message, she really tried to hit Krishnamoorthy on his more moderate views, even when those views were like just a nuanced difference
mm-hmm.
from hers. Like, she called for abolishing ICE and Krishnamoorthy called for abolishing Trump's ICE. And she really hit him hard on that in TV commercials and on the debate stage. And she, you know, as you remember, Sasha, because
yes.
you moderated it, she went hard from the
question
gate.
One. yes.
And so... Yeah. I think that really, you know, put her over the edge at the end of the day with
sure.
voters, you know, who Illinois voters especially and Chicago voters who have seen the president's deportation campaigns on the streets,
right.
in their backyards, wanted yeah. someone who's going to go
message,
hard at the president.
It clearly resonated. Claire, I want to run through a few other news stories that we are paying attention to this morning. Snow and ice outside, right? But warmer weather on the horizon.
Yeah, we've seen this the last couple of times. We've gotten really, really cold, and then we have sort of this great warm-up. Today, high near 42. Tomorrow, high near 50. And then this weekend, we could be flirting with the mid-60s. Friday through Sunday, going to be sunny skies and pretty mild temperatures. So the flurries first, and then we'll be able to get some vitamin D.
Mm-hmm. And there's an update on the Thompson Center. Now, Google, as we remember, purchased the landmark downtown building back in 2022. It looks like while the facade is changing, it's not going to be called the Google Center anytime
right.
soon.
This is a place that Mariah Wolfel, no stranger to, as it's located directly across from City Hall next to the Clark and Lake CTA Blue Line. So the Thompson Center is keeping its name. Google's moving in with roughly 2,000 employees, so they're going to be headquartered there, residing in a pretty iconic building.
Mm-hmm.
But Google's saying they are not going to change the name and that they want to honor the legacy of James R. Thompson. So you can still call it the Thompson Center.
Okay. Well, we also... In other news, got two big festival lineups drop yesterday. Well, the Chicago Humanities Festival is one of them, and Lollapalooza is the other. Let's start with the latter. Who's coming to Lolla this summer?
Yeah, Billy Corgan and the Smashing Pumpkins will be bringing some
Yay!
90s flair to the stage at Lolla this summer. Also some popular Gen Zers and Millennials, because we got to get those folks in Charlie XCX, Lord, and Olivia Dean. It's going to be 4 days again, and it kicks off July 30th to August 2nd.
I'm excited about Olivia Dean.
She's very compelling.
Yes.
And Charlie has just been dominating.
Everywhere.
Stage and screen. She had that documentary come out.
And before Lala, we've got the Chicago Humanities Fest. Some big names in that lineup.
Yeah, the Chicago Humanities Fest. Actually, Peter Sagal will be making an appearance. NPR's own.
Look at that.
Making an appearance. Also, Padma Lakshmi. We know her from Top Chef, but now she's hosting the Americans Culinary Cup. Host of that show, she'll be there. Also, Socho Gonzalez, whose novel, Olga Dies Dreaming. That was the Chicago Public Library's One Book, One Chicago title for 2025. So she'll be there and likely be reading as well.
Now, Mawa and Mariah, now that the peak of the primary is over, what are you watching for? Mariah, you first.
Well, I think still on primary news, it's a matter of digging in to see how much this really exorbitant amount of dark money spending made an impact on these elections. So definitely looking at that today. And then City Council has a meeting today that
you're right back on covering. The beat.
It sounds like they're going to be debating the One Fair Wage Ordinance, which raised wages for tipped workers in the city of Chicago. And some aldermen say that it's been detrimental to restaurants and they're looking to repeal it. Mm. The mayor supports the measure and championed it as an affordability measure. And so that'll be the next kind of big story on the city beat.
And what's on your radar, Mawa?
So I'll be shifting gears and talking about the Bears. There's been some whispers in the state legislature that they're going to move this bill. That it's called the Mega Projects Bill. And it's basically a tax incentive program aimed at kind of enticing the Bears to stay in Illinois, and particularly in Arlington Heights, and not go over to Indiana, which, as many of our audience probably knows, Indiana has already passed a law, their own tax incentive plan, to bring them over to Hammond, Northwest Indiana. So we'll see what happens with the Gary Berries or not.
We'll look out for your story on that one. WBEZ's Mawa Iqbal, Claire Lane, and Mariah Wolfel.
I want to thank this country, the greatest country on earth, for giving an immigrant kid and his family the chance to live the American dream. Only in this country could my story happen. And only in this country could a kid like me serve in the halls of Congress.
Forced our opponents to the left and to be more aggressive against this administration. We did all of this together from the ground up with everything against us.
Tonight we showed what's possible when you listen to the people and give the people what they want.
Now let's bring in three political experts to weigh in on the top races. At the table was Jaime Dominguez, professor at Northwestern University. Connie Mixon, who's a professor of political science and director of the Urban Studies Program at Elmhurst University. And Jim Durkin, who's the former minority leader of the Illinois House of Representatives. I was curious what their major takeaways were, and Jaime kicked things off.
There's a lot of energy within the Democratic Party right now. The question is going to be whether or not they can transfer that over into the midterms.
Yeah. How about you, Jim?
Exactly. There is a lot of energy on the Democrat side of the aisle for all the reasons that we've known from Trump. And we're not seeing good candidates move forward in Illinois. And so this is going to be a tough midterm election. But remember, you know, midterm elections are about, you know, you're running against history. Whoever's in the White House, the party historically has done bad in the congressional races. This one's going to be, I think, even more challenging because of the dumpster fire that's going on in the White House right now.
Yeah.
Connie, what's the main takeaway that stood out to you?
I think one of the main takeaways is what happened in the Senate race. Particularly on the Democratic side, I think the difference between Stratton and Raja was a little unexpected, given that Raja was out early with ads. I think it was last July that he was running his first ads. He outspent his challengers 10-1. Everybody gave him the lead early on, but this sort of demonstrates the coattails of Pritzker, and this was an absolute must-win seat for Pritzker, and how well Stratton and Pritzker were able to organize in the suburbs and downstate.
Yeah, so he had a huge head start.
He had a huge
war chest.
Yes.
Correct.
Did you expect him to win?
If you'd asked me last fall, yes.
I did.
I did, too.
I expected him to win.
Yeah.
So let's talk about surprises then. Jim? surprises of the night.
Well, the surprise that I can't say there's a real surprise, but I'll just go back to the U.S. Senate race. I thought this was Raj's to lose, but you know it's easy to the day after the election to be a Monday morning quarterback. But I think he may have peaked a little too early, and his message probably people got used to it, and then Juliana Stratton came in the last few months, and I think that that's probably to her advantage that she came in a little bit late. They timed it perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
I am surprised, and particularly surprised at the results downstate for Juliana Stratton. That's where I thought Raja would do much better, but I saw that he was not performing to the level that he should have to be able to pull this off. Because I think Cook County was always going to be tough. You know, it's just a tough place to go. But again, what you know, what Connie said, this was a must-win for the governor, and he had a lot on the line because of what his future intentions are. Mm. And they're going to look back to see whether or not how he performed in Illinois in a very competitive race.
How are you thinking through that those results, Jaime?
For me, because I'm closest to it, but the 9th congressional district was a lot closer than I thought. I thought Kat Abu-Ghazaleh did a wonderful job of raising money, and it was an example, I think, of what's to come in terms of new leadership, young leadership within the Democratic Party. You basically had a Gen Z versus a Gen X going at it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that that was good from a civic engagement standpoint, so I'm very happy about that. But, you know, Dan Biss, I'm sure he was biting his nails last night until he finally crossed the finish line. But for me, that was actually surprising.
You know what's been on my mind? It's something that you alluded to, Jim, is just what's going on at the White House.
Yes.
I believe you called it a dumpster fire.
I absolutely, and I stand
and,
by it.
Whether you know how much that played into what we saw happen last night. I wondered if people would be kind of over the, you know, we're not Trump. At least we're not Trump. Talk. And, you know, it seemed to work in their favor. Like, for example,
Democrat Stratton. Primary, the ICE raids, I really brought out Democrats with a clear vision of what they need to do. And it's not just foreign policy, it's domestic policy, tariffs, these wars that he's entering into, which don't make sense.
Mm.
And, you know, that's another day, another time. But, there's so much disillusionment, but I think out there with the electorate about what's happening next at the White House. And he is a Republican by all means. MAGA, I don't consider MAGA Republican from my perspective. But Republicans.
That's a conversation for another
Republicans
day.
Republicans are going to have to wear, they're stuck with Donald Trump between now and the midterm election next November. And I'm very concerned about where that goes for Republicans. I'm a Republican. I'm not changing parties, but I don't come from that part of the Republican Party. I come from the pragmatic part, the John McCain part. I was friends with John McCain. But I said this yesterday. If Jim Egger was on the ballot yesterday running for governor, he would not have won the primary.
Mm.
That is what's happened to our the Republican primary voter.
Well, Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton will be up against Republican Party Chair Don Tracy. We've got Don Tracy on the line with us now. Good morning, Don. Congratulations.
Good morning. Good morning, Sasha. Thank you very much.
How are you feeling about the win?
Pretty great. I have, you know, been in this business. If you want to call it a business, I think it's more of an avocation. For some time as, you know, party chair, mostly helping other candidates, but I've run a couple times before and I've experienced the loss. And I can tell you, winning is a lot more fun than losing an election.
So in your opponent, Stratton, we've got a nominee who's pledged to make life more affordable for Illinoisans. And she says she's going to do this by raising wages and pushing for Medicare for all. Tell us more about what you stand for.
I think for Democrats to say they're the party of affordability is a cruel joke on the public, because everything Democrats do increases the cost of living. Starting with spending, you know, under Biden, inflation gave us the highest inflation in over 40 years. That, you know, was 20% to 30%. The Democrat war against a reliable, affordable, traditional energy and shutting down power plants before the end of their useful life without, you know, having, you know, substitute power to supplement the grid. you know, that's what's really raising utility prices. It's not the data centers. Like, they want to blame the data centers, but it's the Democrat war against energy. Taxes, Democrats, you know, love old taxes they can increase, and then new taxes, like, for, you know, Stratton signed on to, with, you know, Pritzker, 49 new taxes or tax increases in just their short, you know, their two terms. Health care, the, you know, Affordable Care Act was supposed to be affordable, but I call it the Unaffordable Care Act. Inflation is now running at 3 to 4 times overall inflation. I mean, healthcare inflation is, and I think part of that is due to Obamacare. Shoplifting is a national epidemic right now because of soft on crime prosecution. A lot of people think shoplifting is no longer a crime. Store clerks are told not to do anything about people that walk out of the store with mm-hmm. stuff.
So it sounds like you're going to be focusing on quite a bit in your campaign. And one of the things we were just talking about, Don, is that Lieutenant Governor Stratton opposes Trump's policies and is very outright and very clear about that. Are you going to be in lockstep with the president's policies, or are there areas where you'll set yourself apart?
Well, let me finish. Shoplifting has raised the cost of retail prices for everything you carry out the store. That's another thing. And then finally, housing. When you bring in 10 to 20 million illegal immigrants, you know, through the open borders policy, unhoused,
right,
by definition, mostly to, you know, sanctuary cities, which are short on housing to begin with, that's going to increase housing.
Now tell me how you'll be different from Trump.
Well, I'm going to tell you how I'm different than Democrats right now. Well, let me finish this, because the Democrat plan for reducing or for attacking affordability is just more government subsidies, more government spending. And what does that do? That causes more inflation. You know, the Democrat plan is to do what we've done in, you know, most of the red states. You know, we attack the root causes of problems, you know, like within in the healthcare system. There's way too much fraud. You know, they did a study on, you know, Obamacare, and they found there were a bunch of, there's like 40% of the enrollees that don't use it, probably because they either don't know about it or they're ghost enrollees. But when you talk to Democrats about trying to, you know, to fix that, they just don't want to change.
Yeah.
You know, we both agree, though. I agree with Juliana that affordability is the issue. It's just that the Republican approach to
right. It's the approach. Issues. Thank you, Don Tracy. Congrats again. That's the Republican nominee for Illinois Senate. Jim, your reaction to what we just heard.
Good. I'm glad Don won. Don was I looked as the most credible of the candidates that were running for the United States Senate. And, you know, it's a day after the election. Don has to put his thoughts together about how he's going to move forward. It's going to be a tough challenge for him. It is a very blue state. It's going to take more money than you can imagine to be competitive, even though all the odds are with Juliana Stratton. She is going to be the national story for some time.
Yeah.
Winning yesterday.
I'm curious what you think made Don Tracy victorious over Jeannie Evans or Casey Klebeck.
Nobody knows who they are.
The name recognition.
I mean, I've seen so many names on this Republican ballot. I don't know where they got these guys. They must have stopped and pulled people off a bus somewhere on one of the street corners. Really, it's gotten to that point. But let me just say this, that Republicans lost the argument on immigration. They had it with Biden. They lost it with Trump when he sent in this unqualified DHS secretary, Noem, and this guy, Bovino, to come in and take on these cities. Going after not the worst of the worst, but going after working men and women, nannies, gardeners, construction workers over at Home Depots, people who want to work.
Right.
And you know what? They lost that argument. I mean, and you see pictures of them and videotapes. I mean, set aside and I consider it just the homicides and the murders that they committed up in Minnesota.
Yeah.
It's tragic that we've kind of lost that right now.
Someone was killed here too.
They were. But the thing is, they went in there thinking that with these, I would say, untrained agents, thinking that they're storming the shoreline at Normandy. But, you know, we're trying to get, you know, we're going after people who are the bad actors, but they didn't, because yeah. There's a quota that was set by the White House of how many people have to be arrested on every day by this Stephen Miller. and they had the pressure was on them. And shame on all of them.
Yeah, Operation Midway Blitz was something. Listen, Don Tracy.
Disgrace. Yep.
You know, Don Tracy's got an uphill battle to win this seat, Connie. Do you think he is making the case to undecided voters?
Absolutely not. Just in the questions that you were asking in his response, he refused to separate himself by even a sliver from President Trump. And in a state like Illinois that has a generic ballot of 55 to 57% Democrat, trying to win over moderate Democrats or independents, that is not the way to go about it. I think what is also telling is that the Republican Party is not putting any money whatsoever into Illinois for the Senate race, for any of these congressional races. They consider it gone. Don Tracy would serve himself well to moderate his positions a bit in a state like Illinois, but he just seemed to refuse to do so.
Jaime, what kind of influence will the next senator have?
It all depends, I think, on how they're able to, in this case, if Julianne Strand, how she's able to basically bring her agenda to Congress and work across the aisle if possible to get legislation passed. Hmm. So, you know, good. As my colleagues were saying here, Illinois is a very blue state. We've seen what Julianne Stratton's platform is. But it sounds like, just from what I've just heard from your guests on the air here, it sounds like nothing's changed but the date with him. So he can continue to, you know, rephrase his positions on inflation, rephrase his position on immigration. But as Jim was saying, particularly on the issue of immigration, I think that's going to be huge. But I think what the Democrats need to be careful about is, you know, the way that the narrative is framed, right? And I think that with the application of enforcement, I think, you know, you have within the Democratic Party folks that are talking from abolishing ICE to reforming ICE. And I think there has to be somewhere kind of in the middle, I think. Mm-hmm. People are all for example, if you're a reformist, perhaps implementing new guidelines for qualifications by better training, right, and holding folks accountable. I think that's something where you can perhaps draw in more moderate, maybe Republicans, but definitely independents. And so I think that's going to be the issue. It can't just be an anti-Trump.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Division of the Arts and Humanities at the University of Chicago, offering an interdisciplinary Master of Arts program in humanities that provides individualized attention in a supporting community. The flexible curriculum allows students to focus coursework within a single department or engage with multiple disciplines, creating a uniquely tailored graduate degree. Applications now open for the April 30th deadline at humanities.uchicago.edu.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube. But what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.
Most watched congressional races was the 9th District, which covers some North Side Chicago neighborhoods and northern suburbs in Cook, Lake, and McHenry counties. And that is where Evanston Mayor Daniel Biss just came out on top. Here he is.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Congratulations. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling great. Obviously, it was a hard-fought race and a really, I think, important win, not only for progressives in this district, but for people who want to see that a diverse coalition from the community can beat back a wall of out-of-state right-wing money.
You said your win shows that the election, quote, can't be bought. How so?
Well, you know, AIPAC spent millions and millions boosting another candidate, attacking me, trying to meddle here, all on behalf of a hard-line right-wing militaristic approach toward policy toward Israel that is not only not what I believe, it's not what most of the district believes. And so they tried to hide who they were. They tried to hide where the money was coming from. They tried to hide what outcomes they were trying to buy. And the people of our district saw through it. And I think that's a very important message for the whole state and the whole country, that the people of this country are not interested in having out-of-town, far-right interests hide what they're trying to do and then buy election outcomes.
What are the main issues that you're focused on as you head towards the general election this fall?
Well, listen, we're dealing with the same crisis and nightmare that we were dealing with the day before the election, which is Donald Trump is the president, and the ICE and CBP attacks on our communities are obscene and dangerous and un-American. And the attacks on our democracy and the attacks on working people are dangerous and un-American. And so we have a lot of work ahead. And I'm excited not only to have won, but to have this coalition that I'm working in to make sure that we bring justice to this country.
You know, if you win in November, you will be filling Jan Schakowsky's shoes, right? And this is someone that you have called your political hero. So tell me, will you be following in her footsteps? How are you going to set yourself apart?
Well, I would certainly try to. You know, Jan is an icon in our community for a very specific reason, which is she's fought for the values of this community relentlessly when it was easy and when it was hard, and she's done it effectively and with courage. And so I take her endorsement incredibly seriously, and I take the responsibility of filling those shoes incredibly seriously. You know, obviously the world continues to change, and, you know, all of us evolve, and I'm not going to be exactly the same as Jan Schakowsky, but I think she's been an extraordinary role model, an extraordinary template, and an extraordinary leader for our community.
That's Evanston Mayor Daniel Biss. Thank you so much for checking in with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Still with us here in studio, Jaime Dominguez, a professor at Northwestern University. Connie Mixon, who's a professor of political science and director of the Urban Studies Program at Elmhurst University. And Jim Durkin, the former minority leader of the Illinois House of Representatives. So, Jaime, you work at Northwestern. That's in the 9th District. Mm-hmm. What were conversations like around there leading up to the election?
I think it was exactly what Daniel was just talking about, you know, pushing back against the Trump administration in terms of them terrorizing the communities. And it wasn't just, immigrants, but more importantly, it was also just Americans. And I think that's what basically broke the camel's back on immigration here, the fact that it wasn't, it kind of lost focus, their mission kind of changed. But I think, you know, affordability in terms of just trying to bring their prices down, also bringing attention to the war, but framing it from affordability perspective, in terms of, you know, we've seen the increase already with fuel in terms of airlines already raising their price. I think United Airlines just increased their prices for fares for the summer. And
they did.
Also,
yes.
Right, in terms of the truck industry, so transportation, that's also going to be hit. And we're going to actually feel it as consumers. So I think framing it in that way, I think will just be, I think, more receptive, not just to the district, but also just nationally. I think that's something that people can get behind. So you think
he's learned a few things as mayor that he can take
things
to that national stage?
Yeah, but he's not going to stray too far from Jan Schakowsky. You know, it's a moderately progressive district. He may have some new ideas with regards to either, you know, funding public education or how to implement more accessible health care. But he's going to pretty much toe the line as Jan Schakowsky. But again, that what the district historically has been. And so I expect him to continue to push forward in that way and build coalitions.
Yeah, Mayor Biss is going to be up against Republican John Ellison in the general election. What are your thoughts on that matchup?
Who is he? I'm serious. Who is John Ellison? And I wish I was joking, but the fact is, Dan will be, he is the, I'll just congratulate him in advance. I've known Dan for a number of years when he served in the Illinois House. We disagree on a lot of issues, but he's a serious person. He's a very bright person. He fits the district. Republicans are not going to have a shot at that. There will be no money spent in D.C. On behalf of the Republican nominee. But Dan was able to, you know, not only is he of his own brand, but he got the Congressman Schakowsky to support him. And that's what made the difference. Mm-hmm. Because you can tell how progressive that district is because they have a cat. I can't even pronounce her last name.
Abu Ghazali.
Yeah. Yes. Took second place and beat Laura Fine.
Mm-hmm.
So I will just say this. I wish I could say more about Republican candidates, but that is the state of the Republican Party that we've seen. We've lost our way. We don't have that big tent anymore. Mm. And a lot of people who were traditional Republicans who believed in fiscal conservatism, but, you know, let's just not get too far to the right, have left the party and to become independent voters. So it's the Republican Party has been it's been hijacked by the far right. Mm-hmm. And that's why you have a Bailey who's going to be our nominee for governor, who's going to be the we're going to see the same experience. And
you sound disappointed, Jim.
I'm disappointed as a Republican that we are not more competitive. I was labeled a rhino in Springfield because I worked with Governor Pritzker on his first budget. And because as a suburban homeowner who was a prosecutor at 26 in California, I supported the assault weapon ban. I voted for ERA. Is that wrong? No, that's what Republican Party needs to do. We do not, we should be the big tent. We need to expand our footprint.
Yeah.
And we're not doing that.
Connie, in many of the races this year, there have been accusations of candidates accepting dark money. So, you know, money from ICE and detailed accounts of the millions of dollars AIPAC and other super PACs have been just pumping into these races. What is your read on how that actually affects voters?
At this point, there's very little to do about it. The genie is out of the bottle after Citizens United. All of this dark money that is flowing in, I mean, candidates themselves can't even control who's running ads for them, who's running ads for or against their opponents.
Is this not typical? Have we seen it before at this level?
We've started to see it, but it's really escalated. I think this election, and it's only going to get worse, and we're going to see more of it in the midterm elections.
Well, both parties' hands are dirty with this.
And yeah, the thing is, absolutely.
Citizens United fits perfectly in with the business models of the RNC and the DNC.
Yeah.
Plain and simple.
Yeah.
So we talked about the matchup there between Biss and Ellison. Let's go back to that Senate race for a moment, because I want to know your thoughts, Connie, on or especially what you're going to be watching for in that matchup between Stratton and Tracy.
I think it's Stratton's. I mean, yesterday was that was the ball game. As I said earlier, Illinois is a generic ballot, 55-57% Democrat. I don't think Tracy's going to get any national money. I think he, by his unwillingness to separate himself from Trump, he doesn't mm-hmm. pick up any moderate voters whatsoever.
And
so I think it's a done deal.
The financial contributions from Governor Pritzker.
Right. And
that helps.
It absolutely helped in the primary, and I'm not sure that he needs to spend any more in a general election.
Thoughts, Jaime?
No, I think also it was obviously hers to lose, but I think being safe blue district, I don't expect her to, in any way, shape, or form, deviate from what she has said. One thing I do want to say, though, that we haven't talked about, I want to just bring some kind of national perspective to this, just
sure.
in terms of, you know, the Democrats are energized, they're angry, and rightly should be. But if they want to carry this over into the midterms and be super competitive across the country, I think Texas is a good example of what Democrats need to look at as a playbook. For example, in Texas, right, with the Senate primary there between James Tallarico and Crockett.
That was something,
for example,
wasn't it? Yeah.
We saw, and again, this is an off-cycle election, all right? 2.3 million voters came out. So that was a record turnout for Democrats. And it exceeded the 2008 turnout, which is 2.2 million. But that was a presidential election. So there obviously is energy there. Another thing I think also, because it's a big part of the coalition, Democratic coalition, is the Latino vote also. We saw in heavy counties with Latino voters mm-hmm. that they had now gone back to the Democratic Party. So in counties such as Bexar County, Bexar County, you've seen a huge shift of Latinos moving back to the Democratic Party. Mm. Again, to Jen's point of how, in terms of the Republic coalition, they somehow thought that this support for Trump in these heavily Latino counties was going to continue. They've lost that completely. So I think the Democrats actually need to kind of take advantage of that, but also they have to be careful in terms of how they frame the narrative about the issues. It can't just be an anti-Trump platform. Again, they got to talk about it, affordability in the ways that I just outlined in terms of right rising costs at the grocery store, rising costs at the gas pump, right? And so I think that again, that's a good example of how Democrats can compete nationally in districts that are very competitive. Absolutely. So, and again, Latinos are going to be, I think, an important part of this coalition going forward. And so I think the Republicans really kind of lost this idea that they were now moving over to the Republican Party. We had our people that studied this group's political behavior. It made clear that it was just a one-off, and they're showing it again that it was a one-off because they're coming back home.
Yeah. It's interesting that you say that because I've spent some time over the last several weeks talking with the candidates for the Democratic primary in that race and asking them that very specific question. Like, aside from how you feel about Trump, what do you stand for? What does the party stand for? And I don't think I got a straight answer from any of the three leading candidates. So interesting. Jim, you were raising eyebrows there. I want to know what's on your mind.
Well, what's on my mind is that Trump had the perfect opportunity to expand the Republican Party and to continue on with the support he received from the Hispanic community last cycle. The Hispanic voters are small businessmen and women. That's Republican ideas. They're very, very tight-knit families, more Republican, very education-minded, school choice. That's my experience. He lost it all. He lost it all with the snap of a finger by doing these awful raids in Chicago, Minneapolis, and throughout the country, where family members were stripped away from their spouses, children. I mean, we have examples of this little boy who was put on a plane. And then you have 10 guys with machine guns breaking down doors to take out an old man who's in his boxers, who did nothing. Nothing.
Outrageous.
So that's why we are, I don't know how we're going to get the respect and the credibility back with the Hispanic voter with Donald Trump. And that's going to carry over to next November. And it's very disappointing because we had a perfect opportunity because Biden blew it at the border. Trump sealed up the border. Fantastic. But be respectful. Go after the worst of the worst. But he didn't. He went after good people who came here for a better life. Okay, they came here illegally, but the fact is they weren't causing problems. They were paying taxes. They're working.
Yeah.
And they're being pulled off the street like Eastern European takedowns.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, Connie, I mean, Congressman Krishnamoorthy, Congresswoman Kelly, they just lost their bids for Senate. What's next for them?
Well, you know, they always have the option of going into lobbying. I think they'll be absolutely fine. You know, they could mount a comeback, as we saw Melissa Bean. We haven't talked about that one yet in the 8th Congressional District.
Right.
Who actually came back to win in the 8th. But I suspect they will all be fine. They've had very distinguished careers. They've built a lot of support. They could teach. They could go into lobbying. They could go to the private sector. They could still have influence throughout the state politically. I think they're going to be just fine.
Yeah, I think Robin Kelly was asked that last night, and she just sort of—
You might need a nap.
You know, there's that too, and I think she said something along the lines of, you know, I'll see what's next. You know, before I was kind of like led into Congress, and so we'll see what my path ends up being. You know, forward from here. What does this mean for their districts, though? The 2nd district and the 8th district. What would you say?
You know, I think that they're well represented. I mean, they had huge numbers in each one of these congressional races. I mean, 8, 15, 10 candidates running. So the winner actually ends up with a plurality, right, of like 30%, something like that. And what we saw throughout the state of Illinois was the candidates who won ran the race that was needed for their specific district. So all of this talk about Democrats, are they leaning more progressive? Are they leaning more to their moderate side? You know, no. Jim talked earlier about, you know, the Republican needing to be a big tent party.
Yeah.
Well, maybe the Democrats are leaning a little more towards the big tent, and candidates need to run the race specific to their district, to their state, to their constituents. And I think that's what we saw last night in who prevailed in each one of these races.
Anybody hear any reactions yet from the public on any of these results?
Not yet.
Curious how folks are feeling about, you know.
I don't think they're surprised. I don't think they're surprised by the energy in the Democrat primary, particularly in Illinois. I saw that coming a long time ago, and so I wouldn't consider last night. You know, I anticipated that they would have a good night, meaning energy and the vote totals that came out in the primary.
Yeah, we talked with folks too who were at polling places, et cetera. And, you know, it seemed like issues were driving them to fill out the ballots this time around. You know, as we've talked about, everything that we saw with ICE and Operation Midway Blitz here in the Chicago area. And just the price of all of the things, right? Gas, ridiculous at this point. Are they hanging too much hope in, these folks being able to fix these issues? Or are we still sort of at the mercy of the White House, what's going on in Washington? What do you think, Jaime?
Well, I think they just need to make sure they got to definitely stay on target here in terms of the affordability and economic issues, the bread and butter issues, because that's what's going to get people out to vote. So, again, I think that the Democratic Party needs to use what happened last night and carry it over by continuing to speak to those issues of affordability and make it very, very tangible. And I think that's what's going to hopefully get, you know, perhaps those voters in across the country who perhaps are on the fence about whether they should be participating. Like, yes, they may agree with what the Democratic Party is saying on economic issues, but you got to give them something, a reason to come out and actually vote. So I think that's going to be the challenge for the Democratic Party.
You know what? I'm glad we brought that up. What motivated people to vote in this election? Let's hear it from the mouths of voters themselves.
What educational standards are they going to start fighting for with regard to AI and the use of technology within the K-12 classroom?
I'm a public employee. I would love to have some student loan forgiveness, but, you know, again, like, those plans are kind of up in the air right now. So what are their plans to really safeguard those programs and ensure that they're not privatized so that they can be sent into collections and all these other things that they're threatening folks with?
One of the things I always tell my students is that it's the local issues where sometimes your voice can be heard the most. So it might sound super small potatoes, but for me, it's a bond proposal on the ballot to tear down one of our outdoor pools in Oak Park and replace it with an indoor pool.
My top concern is property taxes. This is something that directly affects the life of every person in the community.
Voters in Illinois talking about the issues that motivated them to go to the polls. As we were discussing before the break, Connie, Jim, and Jaime, a lot of people focused on local issues, right? And local matters, right? We spend so much time telling folks, find out who your judges are, find out who your controller is or who's running for controller and assessor.
All politics is local.
Yeah, all politics is local. We've got Republican nominee for governor Darren Bailey on the line with us now. Why don't we chat with him? Welcome to In the Loop.
Glad to be here with you. Thank you so much.
Happy belated birthday to you, sir. Was it yesterday?
Well, it was yesterday. I had the best gift that I could ask for, so thank you so much.
So tell us how you're feeling about the win.
We're feeling good. It feels, you know, we felt like politics is an interesting thing. You can feel like, or honestly feel, be assured that you're winning, but that last 48 hours gets brutal and then everything falls apart and you're not sure. It's kind of like the weather here in Illinois, and it's kind of like a government here in Illinois. You just wake up sometimes to a new day and a whole new scenario, but we're feeling good. And my message, I think, was clear last night. We're headed to the Republican Unity Day breakfast right now as we speak. We've got to unify our party, and then I want to unify the state. And I haven't always been the best at unification, and I own that, and I recognize that.
Yeah, tell me, are you going to take a different approach this time around? You did lose to Governor Pritzker back in 2022, or are you going to do similar approaches like you did in your last campaign?
Thank you. We've learned a lot. You know, being a farmer, there's never a year where I do things the same. And the reason I don't do them the same is because I found out what worked and what didn't. And, you know, serving as a state rep and serving as a state senator in Southeast Illinois and honestly probably one of the most conservative areas in the state, serving through COVID, I carried that message north, and I carried it so hard that I didn't take time to listen and to realize that didn't resonate with Chicago. I said some unkind things about Chicago, thinking that, hey, guys, you know, we've got problems here. Let's wake up and fix them. But
to be clear, you called Chicago a hellhole, and now you're saying it's beautiful. So tell me more about what changed your mind.
Well, so to be clear as well, I have retracted that words and said that was a mistake, because Four years does a lot to a person to sit and think. And I mean, 7 months ago, it was not on the radar to run for governor. So when we felt that we were being called back into this, we had to sit down and say, okay, what has to be done different? I'm not going to run because I am passionate about Illinois. Mm-hmm. And then you take the tragedy that we went through. And I mean, that for the first time in my life, I had 3 months of downtime to just literally think. I've never taken downtime at all for even a day in my life. So I began to realize how precious life is, right. How brief life is. And it really did. It just, I began to realize that, wow, if we're going to do this again, then, I'm a different person. Chicago's different. I think the things that just listening to the comments beforehand that got the people out to the poll yesterday, you know, financially we're hurting and we need to fix that. And Chicago has issues that have been going on, and just like the rest of Illinois have been getting worse over the last several decades. So let's turn that around. And I'm willing to be that person to say, okay, hey, you saw who I was 4 years ago. Give me a chance. See who I am today. I've made mistakes. Let's work together and let's begin this turnaround story for Illinois and Chicago.
Yeah, and I am sorry about your loss. That was unimaginable. So,
well, thank you.
Yeah, tell me your stance on working with the Trump administration.
My stand on that is that, and honestly, it's the same as it was. I am my own person. I am going to be working with the legislature and the people. That's the only ingredients that are going to be, any outside influence, this thought that anyone outside of my administration or nationally is going to have any kind of an impact on what we do here in Illinois is wrong. It's not going to happen. Let's take the ICE situation, for example. You know, I think that that could have been done a whole lot differently. Mm-hmm. There should have been better coordination with that. And what happened was tragic, and it didn't need to happen. And you know, I turn all that around to say that, well, if J.B. Pritzker and Brandon Johnson would have been allowing local and state authorities to go after these hardened criminals that, you know, this was all about in the first place. And if we would have focused solely on them, none of this other nonsense would have happened. And unfortunately, you know, I like to say from time to time that J.B. Pritzker hates Donald Trump more than he loves Illinois. And I think we need to think about that, because I will work with whoever the president is. If I would have been elected 4 years ago, I would have had no issue.
Looks like we lost him. Well, thank you. Our thanks to the Republican nominee for Governor Darren Bailey, who just joined us on the line. Quick reaction from you, Jim.
Well, I'm happy for Mr. Bailey. You want to give people credit for winning their elections, but at the end of the day, he is a proud member of MAGA. Darren Bailey served in my caucus for 4 years, and he was a reliable no vote. He has nothing to stand on when it comes to any legislative accomplishment or working across the aisle. Mm-hmm. This is a man that preached and supported the 51st state separating Chicago from the state of Illinois. He cannot be taken serious, and he can say that he's a changed person, but the fact is words and actions matter. He was a grown-up man when he made those statements and when he was in the legislature, things that he's done. He's not a serious candidate. I look at November as nothing more than wash, rinse, repeat with J.B. Pritzker and Darren Bailey.
With that, let's move to another guest that we've got on the line. Joining us now is the Democratic nominee for Senate, Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
Doing well, and congratulations to you.
Thank you. I'm excited.
What do you attribute? Yes, absolutely. I'm curious what you attribute your late campaign surge to.
Oh, goodness. I mean, I think that for the past 11 months, you know, I've spent every day talking to Illinoisans. I've crisscrossed the state. And I think my campaign had the theme, of course, of give the people what they want. And that's what I focused on. And I think between, people might have had an impression of what might happen. I was being outspent on, by my opponent. But between tapping into the energy that people were feeling, tapping into the frustration that so many voters have with Washington, making sure that I clearly represented not a message that was focused on, here, let me tell you what you should care about, but listening to the people and letting that be sort of the foundation of what issues were most important. I think all of that mattered. And then, of course, being able to communicate that message. It was a message that resonated with voters, you know, higher wages and access to health care, and really standing up and fighting against Donald Trump. And I think that I've been able to communicate that very well, and, mm-hmm. and voters responded.
So, yeah, you've talked about wanting to abolish ICE. When we sat down together a couple weeks ago, you were telling me about, you know, your plans to raise the federal minimum wage, your push for Medicare for all. Tell me, where will you focus first? What are your priorities?
Well, certainly, you know, I told the story almost every day on the campaign trail about my start in state politics, which was serving as state representative. And I got there because 10 years ago, I was caring for my mother who had Alzheimer's. And I was appalled at the fact that under the leadership of our previous governor and my state representative, there were efforts to strip away health care from seniors like my mother. That's what made me run, because I wanted to fight for our older Illinoisans who deserved access to health care. And here we are 10 years later, and health care is still under threat. So I certainly want to continue the fight to make sure that every Illinois and every American has access to the care they need. Mm-hmm. I do believe that health care is a right, and no one should be choosing between going to the doctor and paying their bills.
And you would be one of just a few Black women senators from Illinois if you win in November. How is that sitting with you, and how is it maybe influencing how you see your role in the U.S. Senate?
Well, I mean, of course, I'm going to represent every Illinoisan. I've done that for the last 7 years, and that's important to me, to take all of the voices of Illinoisan and our diverse state with me to Washington. But there is significance in a number of different ways. I mean, the first Black woman to ever be elected to the United States Senate was Ambassador Carol Moseley Braun. And I've been proud to have her support and guidance and mentorship during this process. We now have two Black women for the first time serving in the United States Senate at the same, you know, at the very same time. And the fact that this would be the first time in history where there would be three Black women, it just shows you why, when we say representation matters, that that's important, that our voices are at the tables where decisions are being made, and that policy is not being made for us, but by us and with us. I should also just point out that with our soon-to-be senior senator, Tammy Duckworth, it would also be the first time in history that two women of color have ever represented a state in the United States Senate. And I think Illinois has just been such an example of continuing to break barriers and make sure that, you know, we bring these diverse voices and perspectives to Washington. We have a lot of history makers coming from our state, and mm-hmm. I look forward to following in their footsteps.
That's Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton. Thank you, and congrats again.
Thanks again. Thank you.
Our panel's still here, Jim Durkin, Connie Mixon, and Jaime Dominguez. I saw you smiling a little bit there, Jaime, when we talked about the history that's happening here, or that could potentially happen here, with a Stratton win in November, being one of the few Black women on the U.S. Senate. What was going through your mind?
I think for me, I was just thinking about just, you know, Illinois as a state, and then the diversification of the state, and that the leadership, I think, needs to reflect that. And with her winning, mm-hmm. and to her point about having two women of color represent the state, I think that's fantastic.
Yes.
I think you need to have their voices represented. And I think that what's going to be critical here is, again, being able to reach across the aisle and build coalitions, right? Particularly trying to win over moderates and independents. So I think that's going to be critical. You know, we know that Republicans have a 7-point advantage right now in the Senate. So you're going to have to also work with the House to get legislation passed, the things that she talks about, healthcare, increasing the minimum wage, bringing down costs, et cetera. So she has a challenge ahead of her, but I think she's got the gusto. Obviously, she won. People believe in her, and whether or not she actually is able to push forward her agenda is going to depend on the negotiation and, mm-hmm. and other representatives coming on board and putting forward a constructive plan that Connie, voters like.
Yeah. What do you think, Connie, about the likelihood of that, her pushing forward her agenda? Is the messaging that we're hearing from her one day after this primary win, is she on point at this point in the race?
I mean, I think she's on point for what a lot of the Democratic base wants to hear. The reality is a lot different by the time you get to the Senate. Mm-hmm. Legislation just is incremental by nature. We are not going to see an immediate $25 per hour minimum wage nationwide, right? It's going to take some time. We may see some incremental changes, but it's not going to happen overnight. And more than likely, Democrats are still going to be the minority in the Senate, whereas maybe there's a chance for a majority Democrat in the House.
Mm-hmm. Jim, your thoughts?
Well, I think anybody who's in that position, you got to be careful you don't bite off more than you can chew. And it's good to talk about what your plan is and what you want to do, but there has to be reasonable expectations with the voters. And I would just suggest that Lieutenant Governor Stratton take a book from Senator Dick Durbin, who I think was a very measured person in the U.S. Senate. He had a moderate centrist streak to him.
Yeah, let's talk about that. We're losing Durbin's institutional power and knowledge, which has been incredible over almost three decades.
Exactly. And I ran against Dick Durbin in 2002 as a nominee. And I became friends with him afterwards. We still are very good friends. I wish it was more of that going on right now. But the fact is, he reflected Illinois. And what I saw him do in the Judiciary Committee, I thought, was he put some very good people on the bench. For the most part, very good U.S. attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an extremely, extremely important responsibility that he had. He could have gone far to the left with the judiciary. He didn't do it. He found the best people who that should be serving as Article III judges. And for the most part, he had the right people in the right place for these other appointments. But just remember, the state, to be successful, you've got to be more in the center.
Yeah.
I think that, and again, I can't stress that more, that she should sit down with Senator Durbin and follow his lead. She's got to do what she's got to do in a primary. I get it.
I bet sit down with Durbin is on her list of things to do. Yeah. I'm sure of it. Real quick, around the table, what are you keeping your eye on?
I'm thinking about just the midterms and whether or not, Democrats can actually, again, really take this energy and this enthusiasm and carry it over and flip the House and maybe win a seat or two in the Senate. So I think that'll be good for in terms of leverage. But as Jim was saying, I think at the end of the day, though, also it's about, when it comes to governance.
Yeah,
in the primaries, you can kind of go to the fringes somewhat. But when it comes to governing nationally and passing legislation, got to be in the center.
Quick thoughts, Connie?
Yeah, I think we all start looking at November. We start looking at what's happening in other states. I don't think there were, huge surprises here in Illinois last night. But I think we start to look at what's going to happen in the midterm, whether that enthusiasm gap prevails for Democrats or whether it starts to,
dwindle
a little bit.
Yeah. Correct. November will be here before we know it.
No, exactly. I think that it is going to be about the midterm. I'm not expecting any big surprises next November in Illinois, but it's going to be in the House of whether or not that flips, and they have to be careful that it's not going to be just impeach, which I think some of them want to do. They have to work. They have to get things done if they're going to take on that responsibility as a majority party.
Our thanks to Jim Durkin, former minority leader of the Illinois House of Representatives, Connie Mixon, who's a professor at Elmhurst University, and Jaime Dominguez, who's a professor at Northwestern. Thank you all.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening. This episode was produced by Meha Ahmed, Sienna Greaves, Micah Yason, and Linnea Dominic, with production help from Gina Montagna and Brooke Miller. Ethan Schwab is our engineer. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll talk again soon.